Hello and welcome to another edition of Basketball. I'm Sean Woodley.
I'm Katie Heindel.
And today's show is brought to you by Rasheed Wallace, who on this day in 2001 was one day removed from his first ever All-Star Game appearance, Katie. It did not go well for our boy Sheed in the 0-1 All-Star Game, unfortunately. 21 minutes played, 1 of 7 from the field, 2 points coming off the bench in a low-scoring All-Star Game, 110-111 for the Eastern Conference. That is a 2001-ass All-Star Game score. Katie, what went wrong for Rasheed in this All-Star Game? Do you remember watching this All-Star Game?
No. Full disclosure, no, I don't. I don't know. Probably a lot of things went wrong, or just like it was the All-Star Game before Kyle Lowry transformed the All-Star Game last year. Do you know what I mean? Like the All-Star Game didn't really leave a lot of room for like competition or excitement, honestly, until last year.
Yeah, the All-Star Game era is split up into pre-Booty and post-Booty. And we're living in a better era nowadays. Katie, the podcast is moving into a better era as well, because as of today, it will now be known as the day we had this guest on the podcast, and going forth, it can only go down for us from here, frankly. Today, we have a wonderful guest with us who is joining us from the Great Canadian Baking Show, one of our favorite shows. We talk about it all the time. Maybe the Twitter account we interact with the most as well, from our basketball account in some strange simpatico. It is a comedian. He is the host of the Canadian Baking Show. As I said, he's a Raptors fan, huge basketball fan. It is Alan Shane Lewis. Alan, welcome to the show, man. Thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me. You know, this is, I really appreciate it.
We are very, very happy to have you.
That Rasheed Wallace thing there, I feel like that's a good stat. He didn't get sent out of the game. So I think that's a positive. That's like a win for Rasheed Wallace.
That's true.
If anyone
actually, yeah,
were
that's
to
true.
Pick up a T in the All-Star game, it surely is
it's
Rasheed
him.
Wallace.
Yeah.
But unfairly. You know what I mean? Unfairly.
Yeah. Just like staring at a ref, just kind of menacingly, like just like a little too menacingly, just a little bit, you know?
He just has an intense gaze. He can't help that.
Yeah.
Oh, Sheed. We love him. By the way, next week, Katie, is a very big Sheed anniversary, and we'll get to that in a week's time. But for now, we have a very fun show planned. Alan, first of all, let's like promote what you got going on off the top here. Mm-hmm. You are the host of a television show. We just said what show it is, but detail to us the new season of The Great Canadian Baking Show on the CBC. What's where can people find it? What can people expect? And how was it for you becoming one of the new hosts?
First, it was a dream come true. I remember when I first got the news, I was just like running through my house, just on the phone with my agent, just like freaking out and just like, yes. So that was fun. But this season, it's going to be a lot of fun. This is I feel like the Great Canadian Baking Show is this like warm hug that we all kind of need right now. It's such like the sweetest people, the sweetest bakers, no pun intended, but pun intended. They're all great, and I think everyone's really excited to see what these people have baked up, and I can't imagine like a sweeter group of people. Like from the day we met them, they were just so nice and they are so helpful, and I love it. Like as far as like reality TV show goes, like this is unlike anything else. Like they're like the baking show, they're just always so supportive. Like there's never that bad boy baker. Or like a, you know, like I'm here to win and not make friends. Like this is the exact opposite. Like they're here to make friends, and whoever wins is just like whatever. Like that's not even about it. Like and yeah, I'm just so happy to be a part of it this year, and with my co-host Anne, who's also amazing. Yeah, really excited about what's going on, and I really hope people enjoy it. You know, you can watch that on CBC and CBC Jam. It's on February 14th at 8 p.m. And don't watch MasterChef. Whatever you do. No, I'm joking.
That's what those mean shows.
Just watch both.
Yeah. Yeah. It's mean and stressful.
I remember watching an episode of the British Bake Off where like there was an instance where somebody stole someone's custard or something by accident, but maybe it wasn't by accident, and I was like angry because it was like controversy that shouldn't exist on a show so wholesome and sweet. So yeah, I'm hoping we see mostly wholesome sweetness this year. I'm sure we will. I'm very, very excited. By the way, what's it like working with Bruno? He seems like the sweetest man in the world.
The sweetest dude. Like, he's just so nice. And like, we're just like, Because we have a lot of like downtime in between the base, because some of these bakes were like just straight up 4 hours. So we're either at our trailers or like just off to the side if they need to pull us back in. And just talking with Bruno and Kyla as well, they're just like the nicest people. Bruno's like, you know, really, really, really forward positive as far as just like social justice and everything like that. So you have these like really intense conversations about how we can like change the world and do better. And he's just like the nicest guy, like crazy nice.
That's amazing. I can't wait. I'm so excited for the new season. It's something, like you said, that as the COVID continues to wear on and grind us into dust, this feels like it's going to be a nice little salve to congeal everything back together once again. We have a really packed show today. Of course, with the Canadian Baking Show host being on the show, we have some baking themed segments line up for the second and third portions of the show, including one that's going to involve my dear friend King Cake Baby. That's all the tease you're gonna get. You're gonna deal with it when it happens. This is my thing. I love King Cake Baby. No one understands why. I'm gonna go into a little mascot theory about King Cake Baby in segment number two. Again, our segment we're trying out this week is also baking show themed, so we'll get to that. But we're also going to start off and just kind of talk about what's going on in the NBA, because things are still happening. The NBA continues to push through despite a whole bunch of reasons not to. We're going to dive into it, and we're also just going to get Alan's thoughts on the season as he's been digesting it. He's a Raptors fan, of course, too, so we're going to dive into the Toronto Raptors and trade rumors and all of that good stuff. We got a loaded show. Before we get to our headline segment, please, a reminder, go to patreon.com/abasketball with two H's. You can sign on up over there for $4 a month, get into our Patreon community, you get into our Discord chat, and also you get access to our mailbag episodes, which we should be recording a new one in the next week or so here. So please get in there. You get the mailbag episodes. They're a ton of fun, and we love doing them, and we love doing them for you. So get up in there, patreon.com/abasketball with two H's. That's enough business off the top. Let's get to the headline segment with our special guest, Alan Shane Lewis from the Great Canadian Baking Show, coming up in just 1 second. All right, let's get things rolling here with a quick perusal of the headlines before we get to the fun baking-themed shenanigans in the back couple segments. Some not-so-fun stuff going on in the NBA in the last week or so. It feels like it's been like 4 weeks since last we recorded because so many things have taken place. Katie, we were kind of putting together the showdown rundown yesterday, and we're both stunned by the fact that the Kevin Durant debacle in Brooklyn against the Raptors happened 6 days ago as of today, and not in March of 2019. It felt like a lot has happened since then. Let's dive into that, of course. The Raptors were in Brooklyn on Friday night. Kevin Durant was ruled out just before the game. Inconclusive, or I guess it was like an inconclusive test from someone he had been with in the afternoon. At like the 8 minute mark of the first quarter, he's allowed to come in and he's cleared, I guess, for reasons. And then in the third quarter, he's asked to leave again as that person, that close contact, did in fact test positive. Very cool. The game continued to go on, even though it certainly should not have. The NBA doesn't give a shit. I don't think there's any secret of that anymore. Katie, we'll start with you. What was your sort of reaction to this on Friday? It was, I would imagine, one of despair and anger, I'm guessing, unless you were just really thrilled by the whole roller coaster of the evening. I can't imagine that's where you're coming down, though.
No, man. I was just like, does the NBA understand contact tracing at this point, or is this just further proof that they just kind of like they've just been picking and choosing the science that they enjoy pretty much since the season started, and like the science that works best for them? Because it came out later that like Durant had been in a car with a Nets staffer three separate occasions that day, and that was the person who tested positive. So if they were like, I was like, what if they're just like, they can't get a hold of this guy? Like, what if he's just like, when he first came in and they said that whole thing, like, oh, he's been permitted to play. I was like, what if it comes back that they do get a hold of him halfway through this game and he's tested positive? And I feel like that's exactly what happened. But the whole thing was just like, I mean, bless KD for those tweets that he was firing off once he left for good. The one I do actually agree with, though, was when I forget who said it, but he was like, yeah, NBA, like the fans see through your PR schemes. And I was kind of like, well, he's not wrong. Like, you can't, like, you can't put a PR spin on what is just literally science. I don't know, Sean, like, you and I talked about this afterwards, and I said to you, I felt kind of angry that neither coach had decided to just stop the game, because there's this press on continuity this whole season. That's like the only thing that seems to count. You said you didn't necessarily think it was the responsibility of the coaches, but I have since come to the conclusion that if the league is clearly not going to take responsibility, I kind of wish someone would just make a decision. So in that case, I was a bit just like, you don't have to keep playing. But there's still this sense of like, well, we can't upset like the construct, and we can't upset the status quo of basketball, which is the game must go on, whatever the cost.
Yeah, for sure. Alan, did you have any particularly strong thoughts on the events of Friday night in Brooklyn?
Yeah, it was very strange. I think inconclusive results seemed like enough reason to like not let a player play. I feel like at that point the league should have stepped in and go, no, you can't do it. When we have conclusive stuff, then you can come into this game. So for them to make like multiple mistakes to get this going, it just goes to show you that the NBA does not have necessarily a plan when it comes to all this. And the idea of trying to having like a all-star weekend in March after all they've said and done without like real, like, I don't have faith in what they can do right there. So like, it really just shows you that the league is putting profits over the players' health and safety. And it's true. Kevin Durant can point it out and we can all go, yeah, it's true. But like, it's so strange that they just do not have a plan when it comes to this. I was one of the kind of advocates of the season of like, maybe we take a little bit more time and not get those Christmas Day games. And like, let's have a real plan as to how we can implement this. Like, I feel like the NHL is doing a pretty good job as far as having those like two different kind of conferences in a way. I think, you know, some type of model like that would have been something better than just, you know, well, maybe you can play, maybe you can't play, and having these just like kind of wishy-washy in between lines of, you know, what the rules are and picking and choosing when and choose to believe in the science and all the data. So it's been strange for me. And yeah, I just wish the NBA just actually understood what they were doing.
Yeah, for sure. I'm glad that we've seen some higher profile players than like just De'Aaron Fox coming out and saying how dumb they think the All-Star thing is. And you know, we don't need to relitigate the All-Star thing all that much. We talked about it last week. Nothing has been really changed on that front. It seems like they're still going ahead. It was announced yesterday that they're planning for a halftime dunk contest, which, baby, if anything gets me juiced up, it's an impromptu 15-minute dunk contest. Hell yeah. And so
I say they bring out the trampolines, just, like, like, you might as well. This is like a halftime show thing. Just do it.
It's just a slam ball game breaks out at halftime. Yeah. I guess like my earnest question with the dunk contest thing too, right, is like, are there going to be like helpers, or is that going to be against the COVID protocols, or will the helpers be wearing masks, and where are we going to be like through the looking glass entirely on this thing? I don't know.
I think we should just do that. Full Black Mirror. Just go for it. Let's just get full dystopian. Let's get it out of the way. Let's stop like doing diet dystopian. Let's just go full out. Just, you know, everyone's behind a shield, radiation stuff, suits, whatever. Let's get it on.
Or like drones. Drones only, I think.
Ooh, drones would be cool. Yeah. That's future forward. I like that.
Players get 60 seconds to do their dunks, but the first 30 seconds they have to apply sanitizer to the ball, cutting down on their amount of time to actually pull off their dunk. The first attempt really becomes all the more important. Speaking of the NBA not being able to get out of its own way and continually owning itself, the national anthem thing, which has been a sort of recurring conversation ever since like 2016, came up again this week as the Dallas Mavericks announced they were not going to play the anthem at their games anymore as they prepare to welcome fans back into the building. They had already not been playing the anthem for their first 11 home games this season. And I guess they caught the attention of the NBA by announcing this, and the NBA came out yesterday through their PR goons and said, no, you're still playing the anthem as per our long-standing league policy. And if nothing can be broken, it is, of course, long-standing league policies. And then, of course, because Mark Cuban is a coward, he said, yeah, okay, that's fine, we'll play the anthem, and really kind of submitted quite quickly. Alan, I'll throw this to you. I feel like it's a consensus among smart people at this point that anthems are stupid before sporting events. Did you have, I mean, everyone had a take on this yesterday. do you have a take on this, or are you just like, please, let's never talk about anthems ever again?
I think to your point, yeah, I think national anthems are weird. Like forced patriotism, I don't know why that's just like shoehorned into sports. Like I don't feel like that's the place for it. You know, it's so weird. It's like everyone just like, yeah, feel your heartbeats and then sing to this quilt. Like you have to do this every game. Like it's so weird. It's so bizarre. I don't understand it. Every time I'm at a game, I'll do it. I'll stand, but I'm just like, what are we doing? Why are we praying to the flag right now? Play some basketball.
Yeah, yeah, nothing like just like actually before we do this podcast every time, Katie and I stand for the anthem as well. It's a very normal thing to do before your work day.
Honestly, the only reason I use the anthem at games is one, it's like a cue for, oh shit, I should be in my media section, relegated up to the gondola already, and I'm late and I'm not gonna. Like, I'll be blocked in the tunnel, you know, when that happens, Sean. So usually it's like a good timing thing for me, but I should keep better track of myself in general. So I don't need the anthem for that. And second, I thought this is a good opportunity that if like arena DJs want to revolt, they could start playing just whatever other game, like in-game songs they've got queued up. Because, you know, they've got a lot of them.
Yeah, the International Sean Players Knight. Anthem, for example. The only anthem that needs to be played.
I thought Intro to Crazy Train because that's my favorite.
You know, like when schools used to like play like that music like right before the anthem, that like,
yes.
Like I don't know if you, we had like Fly to the Bumblebee and they used to just give me like pure anxiety because I was like, oh shit, I'm going to be late. Like, I don't know why.
Yeah, it was like a purposely stressful song. So you were like, oh no, I should be in class.
I might get in trouble for being late because my parents dropped me off late. Like,
yeah, no, I think this was so dumb because they wouldn't have known unless that, I don't know who it was at The Athletic, but someone just wrote about it. And then the NBA had no idea otherwise.
But that goes to show you really how dumb. How stupid it is that if no one knew about it, they didn't do it and it wasn't an issue and no one complained, that it's just a non-factor.
Mm-hmm. I think my favorite thing of this whole situation that underscored how dumb it is the Dallas Stars felt compelled to release a statement saying, we are going to continue playing the anthem because we love America and Texas. And then Ted Cruz quote tweeted it with a thumbs up. You know, if you're on the side of Ted Cruz, probably wrong.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Mark Cuban's a coward, all that.
I love Seth Rogen just bullying Ted Cruz on Twitter. That's so much fun. I'll stand for that.
I would stand for so many things more than the national anthem. On your note, Katie, the national anthem is typically my cue to, oh, I should probably go pee before the game starts and I don't want to leave during the first quarter. That's basically how my body's wired at this point. If ever we can go back to a basketball game again, that'll continue to be how my internal clock works. All of this, I think, kind of underscores that the NBA is wetting itself pretty much repeatedly on a daily basis at this point this year. Alan, I wanted to ask you, just because Katie and I are often kind of in our own little wet blanket bubble where we've been disenchanted with the league all year long. And I think, I know I've questioned, like, am I being too much of a downer about all this stuff? But I'm curious to have a third perspective on the show now. How have you been sort of consuming this season? Has it been different for you? Have you been feeling guilty about watching it in any way? You know, no judgment on how you've been consuming it because everyone's kind of handling things differently. But what's been your sort of approach to watching basketball this year compared to less horrifying and abnormal seasons?
Yeah, this year has been a little different for me. I'm not watching as many games. I'm still getting my recaps, but usually before, if I missed games, I would just like my daily check-in was this like YouTube channel that would like post all the field goals and I would watch that, and I'm finding myself like not watching that even too as well. But I'm turning around on it. This past couple weeks, I've been watching a lot more games. I finally started my NBA 2K21 GM mode with the Raptors. So that's usually the start of my season. I usually start that like immediately when the season starts and start doing some trades and fixing it up. So it's been a strange one. And the absence of certain bigs have been very present. And I'm still very hopeful that the Raptors, you know, they have a really good, strong core this year. And the games that we're losing, we're not losing by a lot. So it's not like Like just all hope, like all hopeless. But like, I understand that being good is like really dangerous in the league because like you don't get any picks, you don't get any accolades. So you're just kind of in that stuck position. So I understand this is kind of a purgatory stasis kind of year, but I'm still enjoying the Raptors. I'm still watching, loving the blooming and blossoming of, you know, our young core, like Fred VanVleet and Pascal. And I will defend Pascal Siakam till my last dying breath. I don't even, you're like, that is my dude. He's been playing basketball for a little bit. I support that. I understand how your head can get in the way of playing some good basketball. As somebody who did that themselves in their own career, I support him, and I will, you know, stop calling him Beyblade. He can see that.
Yeah. And also, the spin move works. Like, if it works every time, keep doing it. Yeah. Like,
yeah.
Make them stop it. Yeah. I've been feeling similarly as the Raptors have kind of turned things around from their 2-8 start. I've kind of really moved into this full on compartmentalization mode where it's like the Raptors, I'm enjoying the hell out of them. Obviously, I have to do work surrounding the Raptors as well. And so that kind of informs, I guess, the attention I'm paying. But like, I'm enjoying watching the games. I'm looking forward to the games in a way I wasn't when they started the season 2-8 and were kind of, you know, the bad vibes Kings. But I'm still also like entirely disenchanted with the whole NBA, and I'm not watching like any games. Like, I watched the end of the Suns Bucks game last night, and it was the first non-Raptors game I had flipped on in like 2 weeks probably. And so I don't know. I feel kind of gross where it's like this part of it's fine, but the rest of it's terrible. But I'm just going to continue on like this part's fine. I kind of feel like the NBA in a way in my own brain. But I don't know, Katie, how have you been kind of dealing with the Raptors getting good again? Are you having a similar sort of feeling, or are you equally just like, fuck this shit, this is dumb and I want this to be over?
I keep missing like banner games. You know, I miss Fred's 45 point game. I miss Nick Nurse getting kicked out. Like, I guess I'm just picking the wrong, but then I'll just forget. It's like, I keep forgetting to do pregame media. It'll just be, I'll look at the clock and I'll be like, oh, it's on now. You know, like I'll just be doing something else. But this, I think, has more to do with time escaping me and melting in general. And this is kind of how I felt, I don't know, probably since last spring, but deeply now in winter. But also, I'm not quite there with both of you yet. Like, I catch up with clips and stuff when I need to, especially like league wide, you know, I'll catch up on stats and what I need to know, but I'm still kind of arm's length, you know, even from the Raptors, I think.
Yeah, totally fair. Can't blame you whatsoever. by the way, the Raptors just announced they'll be finishing the season in Tampa Bay. Good times. Oh, love it. Love the Tampa home city. Yeah. Cool. Before we get into the fun stuff here, Alan, I just wanted to throw a couple questions at you regarding the trade rumors surrounding the Raptors these days. There's people sleuthing around and finding Kyle Lowry's house on the market and thinking that is a sign of anything. A guy who hasn't been at home probably in a year and won't be for another 6 months and is a free agent. Color me stunned that his house is on the market if that is in fact true. You've got Andre Drummond trade rumors flying around as well from Kevin O'Connor of The Ringer. How are you sizing up the trade market as it pertains to the Raptors? Are you a keep Kyle and load up for one last earnest run with Kyle person? Are you a deal Kyle for assets person? Andre Drummond, does he interest you even a little bit? What's your sort of read on the Raptors as they head towards the deadline here?
I'm more in the camp of like, what does Kyle want? Whatever Kyle wants, I want to give it to him. If he wants to kind of pasture out here in the Toronto Raptors team, 100% I'm on board with that. If he wants to contend for one more, you know, championship, I believe he should do that too as well. I think I want the best for him as far as what it does for the team. Like, I don't know. I feel like there's not that many trade options for Kyle Lowry, to get his championship and to benefit us too as well. Like, everyone talks about like that Clippers trade, but if you look at the Clippers, they have nothing. They have nothing to send us. And I don't want any second round picks for Kyle Lowry. That's, you know, disrespectful. And Andre Drummond is like, I would be happy to have 20 rebounds for a big, but he also shoots like under 50%. So I'm like, there's kind of like a monkey's paw when it comes to him and adding him to your team, you know? And I don't know. I would hope I like that fact that we got Bobby Webster. So that's a good sense of like we're going to get a little bit more aggressive, hopefully, when it comes to maybe like this trade deadline or maybe the next one. Because, like, you know, there's no rush in any of this. We're all going to be here. And if this season isn't the season where we win our second chip, I'm okay with that. So I don't think they have to make a move right now, but I'm still enjoying them watching them play this year.
Yeah, yeah. I did a, if you want to listen to my other podcast, Locked On Raptors, I did a breakdown of like my top five Raptors big trade targets today. And boy, it's dark. There's just like there's very little out there. I'm fully in the tank for Gorgie Jang, and that's a place I never imagined myself being. So
friend made up a thing, a fade for Cade, for Cade Cunningham. That was his campaign, but we're not doing that well with it.
No, the tank has gone off the tracks. Is that what a tank does? I don't. They've lost its little treads.
No, whatever. But it's all right.
I'm not gonna. Yeah, I'm done with the analogy. Let's move on. How about that? we've reached the end of the headlines. The next segment is a segment basically for me, and I've tied it in somehow because there's a vague baking connection. So we'll get to that in the next segment. We're doing some mascot theory for my favorite person, my favorite athlete, my favorite mascot. Really, a person who should probably be the president. King Cake Baby, coming up in just a second as we dive into the lore of King Cake Baby, old KCB, and a whole bunch more coming up in just a second.
Oh, no.
What? Oh,
you must be really excited about next week's game on Tuesday, is that correct?
Does he have any other mannerisms?
King Cake Baby, is Charles Barkley your father?
Hey.
Open your eyes real wide, Chuck, for 2 seconds.
If you didn't have blue eyes,
y'all gonna be scared little kids.
When it comes to King Cake Baby, Charles Barkley, you are the father.
Oh, thank you to our friends over at Inside the NBA for incorporating who I think, frankly, should be the fifth member of the panel, King Cake Baby, into a segment last Thursday. Look, everyone, it's mascot theory time. We haven't done this in a little while. I think the last one we did was for Benny the Bull a few months back. If you don't recall, this is a segment where I kind of run through the lore of a mascot who is in the news or that I like in particular, and we talk about them. And today is a particularly horrifying one. King Cake Baby. Horrifying if you misunderstand King Cake Baby, I guess I would say. If you are wise to it, you understand that he's actually a force for good in the world. Kind of like Waluigi, but for mascots, I guess, is kind of how I'd compare him. But anyway, we're going to learn about King Cake Baby today. Before we get into it, Alan, Katie, I want to get your initial thoughts on King Cake Baby. Alan, we'll start with you. Are you a King Cake Baby fan, a supporter? Are you terrified? What's your overall impression of KCB?
I think I'm all three. He's very scary. I don't know what's going on here. Something about New Orleans and their mascots, they just know how to make the most terrifying looking thing every single time. It's so scary. And then I'm also finding, I just Googled it, and I'm just looking at these like baked goods with this like little plastic baby in there. And this is also scary. I don't like this entire thing.
Wait, you're telling me there wasn't a King Cake week on baking show? Come on. What are the producers
doing? I can't confirm or deny that as per CBC's NDA, but I'm just saying, watch for episode 4. I'm just saying.
Katie, what I subject you to so much King Cake Baby talk. I've commissioned you to make me a King Cake Baby mug. You've probably had enough of my propaganda among our dearest pal. But yeah, what are your overall impressions of King Cake Baby?
Yeah, he's a psychological terrorist. You know, I hate this. And you're asking me to like put into my creative hobby the like producing this for you. That's also like he's taking over parts of my life I never wanted it near. And you know, I will call it because I don't understand where it's come from. I think it's a demon personally. And Alan's point about New Orleans mascots is at like incredibly apt. The first iteration of Pierre, like actually a demon from hell. You know, like I've seen you could do like kind of along sides of like ancient I don't know, just like antiquity art or like classical art. And you've got like a pretty, I think that's the prototype they worked off of basically for Pierre. I like the photos. Like, I like the photos of it without like its diaper on and mm-hmm. those weird skinny legs and just like. I know you like it. Seems to be back on social media again. I like that it admitted to it doesn't. It doesn't speak. It just tweets. Mm-hmm. It's terrible, man. I don't know why you like this thing so much.
Because, so look, I think King Cake Baby is sort of a pioneer in the mascot game. And I think Gritty, who of course is the Philadelphia Flyers' famous mascot, I think is derived from the sort of energy that King Cake Baby provides. That sort of, you know, if he's on your side, you're happy he's on your side type of thing. I don't know why mascots are all so cuddly and nice and fun. They should be a part of the team. Basically, they should be intimidating the other, the opposition. And I can't think of anything more intimidating than King Cake Baby standing under the basket while an opposing player from the Memphis Grizzlies takes free throws. I just think it's a good thing to have on your side. So let's dive into the lore, the creation of King Cake Baby, and some theories on the age of King Cake Baby and all that stuff. And I guess the fatherhood. Maybe Charles Barkley is, in fact, the father. I don't know. But the King Cake Baby was designed by Italian-American artist Jonathan Bertoncelli in 2009. It was introduced as a secondary mascot for the New Orleans Pelicans in February 2014. There's some speculation that it may have been worked in during the Hornets era prior to that, but I don't see any actual concrete proof or photos or anything like that of him or it. Again, we probably shouldn't gender the baby because who really fucking knows? But
some... it's Italian American.
Yes, oh, sure. Yes. but yeah, the earliest appearance seems to be February 2014. And it kind of pops up around this time of year, around Mardi Gras every year, and kind of sticks with the team for the remainder of the season. Actually, one of the biggest reasons last year's NBA season stoppage was so disappointing, aside from the global pandemic, was the fact that King Cake Baby's run got cut a month short last year. But, you know, so the second most terrible thing that happened last March. Of course, King Cake Baby is inspired by the dessert King Cake, which is made all over the world, but is particularly endemic to the Louisiana area around Mardi Gras. It is a cinnamon roll style cake, often covered in an icing. You can work in some pralines, you can work in some cream and some strawberries if you really want to get fancy. If you do that, it's called a Zulu King Cake. And you also can do it with a coconut filling as well. There's lots of different of ways to prepare it, of course. And the main signifying element is the little plastic baby representing Jesus that is found inside the cake.
Oh my God.
Honestly, the little plastic babies are far more terrifying than the mascot itself, if you ask me. Yeah. But that's besides the point. of course, the baby, it's sort of like a game style thing where when you cut into it, whoever ends up getting the piece with the baby in the king cake, depending on your interpretation of the tradition, either means you're going to have good luck over the next year. It either means you have to purchase next year's king cake, or in some readings of it, it means you're going to get pregnant very soon. Basically the king cake thing.
No, also, to all three of those.
Yeah, it could be all three. Very, very possible. Also, bakers have recently begun placing the baby outside of the cake to avoid liability for any choking hazard. And to me, you can't eat this cake without choking on the little baby. You know, Darwinism, I guess, kind of kicks in here. At least in my perfect world, it would. But whatever. So that's the sort of inception of the idea. There's been some controversy around King Cake Baby over the years. In 2019, the creator, Jonathan Bertoncelli, sued Universal Studios after the film Happy Death Day featured a slasher killer that seems very derived from the likeness of King Cake Baby. Unsure as to how that lawsuit was settled, but if you pull up the photo of the Happy Death Day killer, you can absolutely see the kind of uncanny likeness between the two. And I hope Jonathan Bertoncelli wins this lawsuit if and when it has not yet been won. So yeah, that's King Cake Baby for you. He's regularly featured in, you know, Pelicans videos of like surprising season ticket holders with tickets for the next season and things like that. Do either of you have any particular memories of a favorite King Cake Baby appearance? Katie, I'll throw it to you first. Anything in particular stand out from King Cake Baby's time haunting the NBA?
I just want to say, I don't think it's fair to make a lawsuit. Like, if you created this thing and then released it into the world, I think you just have to let it go. You know what I mean? You got to take full responsibility. You don't claim it anymore. It's its own evil force and entity. But what I don't know, not really. I think, again, I always just think of the picture of it with its, like, diaper off and its weird skinny legs.
Yeah.
And it's, like, finger up at its mouth, like it's like, whoops.
Yeah. The one where it's not wearing any pants, it does kind of look like when in a movie they cut off a cast from like a leg or something after months of it being mm-hmm. on. That's kind of what it looks like inside the husk of King Cake Baby. Alan, do you have any particular high notes of KCB's career in your mind?
No, I look forward to the day that someone banishes it back to hell. That's just all I'm looking forward to. It's so scary. And the fact that like a horror franchise took your face and made it into a horror mask goes to show you that this shouldn't have been a thing. Like, I don't know how many people greenlit that. Like, that passed through a lot of hands to like in focus groups. And I don't know, I guess it kind of plays into that kind of New Orleans tradition of like scary stuff like that. But mm-hmm. like, come on, man. No, I don't like it.
It's got an
eerie aura to it. I want to be rude, but it's like not that artistically. Like, I wouldn't look at it and be like, wow, a work of art. Someone created yeah. it. I feel like it's like a child's sketch come to life, you know, like a creepy child's drawing.
It does in a way kind of look. Have you ever seen like the like attempted renderings of what Simpsons characters would look like if they were real people? Does kind of yeah. look like that. But again, I think all of these things are features and not bugs. I think mascots should lean into being terrifying across the board. Like, imagine you hate Clutch the Bear, Katie, in Houston. Imagine if he was like a horrifying bear with like blood dripping from its
you
mouth.
You love Clutch. You
I don't
love
Clutch.
Clutch. So
you talked me
theory.
Off the Clutch corner.
You do.
No. Okay. Clutch is fine. I'm a King Cake Baby, gritty acolyte now, and I think all mascots should incorporate some element of horror, because again, you're trying to intimidate the other team and I guess scare children in your own arena. I don't know. One of my favorite instances is when King Cake Baby was on the jump at All-Star New Orleans with Zach Lowe, Jason Terry, and Rachel Nichols, and is just sitting on the panel as they break down basketball earnestly. That's a pretty good one. And basically anytime he's sort of featured in the background and kind of lurking opposing team's players. Again, if you look up Jordan Clarkson, King Cake Baby, I think speaks to the value of King Cake Baby. I'm not sure on the date that this picture was taken.
What did it do to Jordan Clarkson?
So there's a picture of the, like, I guess it's the Lakers in the tunnel getting ready to go play. And you see King Cake Baby kind of lurking in the background, and Jordan Clarkson's doing like a Jim Halpert look at the camera, like, what the fuck is this thing? That's the kind of psychological torment you should be inflicting upon your opponents, I think. Have you guys been able to pull up this picture?
Yeah,
I send it to you? This is good podcast.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he looks very concerned. Mm-hmm. If you can isolate that so only the away team can see that and then tell them that it's not there and make them, you know, kind of question it, that's cool. But I have to see this as a fan. I don't know. I think keep that
in
the arena.
He kind of looks in awe. Like, he looks a little bit impressed. Do you know what I mean?
A little bit, yeah, for sure. My other thing, like, that should be
that
an implementation, a different a different implementation of King Cake Baby as well. I think like Stan Van Gundy could use KCB to his benefit here. If the Pelicans, for example, are playing a particularly porous defensive game, I'd like to see a timeout where Stan doesn't even enter the huddle. Just unannounced, King Cake Baby takes Stan's seat and just stares at the team for 30 seconds and scares them into playing defense. I feel like, you know, we've kind of seen a lot of different fun coaching tactics in recent years, from Nick Nurse's box and one to all sorts of different things kind of to counteract the high level of offense in the NBA. I feel like King Cake Baby fear is the new defense that has yet to be discovered by Stan Van Gundy. But if someone's going to do it, I think it's Stan. I feel pretty good about it.
I don't think Stan has like time for mascots, but I guess if he did, mm-hmm. this one would be pretty efficient.
Right. I think that's kind of all the King Cake Baby theory we have. You guys seem positively grossed out, so we can move on. But shout out to King Baby Forever. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
hard to look away.
It's psyching me out right now. And I'm not even shooting free throws.
If you join our Discord chat, by the way, my profile picture in the Discord is of King Cake Baby, so you'll get to see that as well. Reasons to sign
people
up for the
Patreon.
People
are going to leave because of that.
Did you make King Cake Baby? Are you the artist? Are you part of Chelly?
I did not. Look.
This is a long plug.
Here's the thing.
Made a whole podcast about basketball just to...
Here's my theory, though, is it's credited to Jonathan Bertoselli in 2009 being the year of creation. My sort of lore in my head of King Cake Baby is that KCB is roughly 2,000 years old and has kind of popped up at various points throughout history. We just haven't really seen it, because now we're in the tech age. We can actually see things in real time and there's easy photo sharing, things like that. But I have a sense that King Cake Baby has just kind of been a recurring... sort of bystander of history, just sort of terrifying people throughout the years.
I think King Cake Baby shot JFK. I think that's a fact. I won't Google it because it's a fact that I don't have to check facts.
Well, thanks for the title of the podcast, Alan. That solved that weekly dilemma. And with that, that feels like a perfect place to leave it. Solving of a conspiracy theory. We can't top that at all. We're going to move on and get to the segment we're trying out this week. Of course, with Alan on the show, it's going to be Canadian Baking Show themed. Coming up next, we are going to dive into the great NBAdian Baking Show. That's coming up. All right, we have reached the conclusion of this week's episode, the segment we're trying out this week, and as teased before, it is all Great Canadian Baking Show themed. We're calling it the Great NBAdian Baking Show because I'm terrible at doing puns, and it was the first thing that came to my mind, and Katie okayed it. So there we go. Basically, the conceit of this is Alan being the expert on the program that he is, having hosted it now, we're going to throw a bunch of sort of mainstays of regular seasons of the Great Canadian Baking Show at him, and he's going to tell us the NBA player who he thinks most sort of lines up with this description. Katie and I will also throw in our suggestions as well, but Alan, I'll throw it to you first just because you are the expert here, and we want to make use of your very, very in-depth understanding of the program. First of all, I'm guessing you liked the show a lot before, considering you said you were dancing around your house when you got the gig. Do you have a favorite kind of baker on the baking show, whether it's Great Canadian or the Great British Bake Off? Is there a style of baker who you're like, yes, that's the person I'm rooting for all the time?
Anyone who goes above and beyond and just reads the brief, does the brief, but then adds that extra little flair that's just like, ooh, that's my signature on the bottom of it. Like, I love that type of stuff where they just add that extra element, you know?
Mm-hmm. Like the spin move. It's true.
Yeah.
I think my favorite sort of style is the seasoned old person who's 70, who's been doing it forever and maybe aren't going to go above and beyond, but the basics are just so damn good. And, they'll probably not make it to the final, but everyone's rooting for them so hard because they're just sweethearts who are passing along all this wisdom. That's kind of my, Norman from the British Baking Show is kind of my all time favorite. Just this sweet Irish fellow who wasn't the most talented, but certainly was not the least talented either. Katie, do you have a favorite player type, I guess, if we're going to make the NBA crossovers here?
Yeah, I always like the weird oldies too. They're so intense. They've obviously lived a good chunk of their lives in a very specific way. They usually have very strong, strange outside interests that aren't baking, maybe one or two other things. And then they consistently kind of figure out a way to feature those. And I also really like the regional stuff. The Canadian Baking Show, when you've got there was a woman from Newfoundland, when there's very specifically regional things, and you're like, wow, this country we live in is just a cornucopia of beautiful freaks. And I think like, because you wouldn't get to learn about that stuff otherwise. I like the British one for that too, but mostly the British one, I'm like, all British people are freaks. But in the Canadian one, it feels a little bit more wholesome.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, I feel like so we Jude have some... kind of represents, from season one, represents like all of that. Just like the crazy cool bakes and just so much fun. Mm-hmm.
Hell yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, what a show. All right, so we're going to get into some of these contestant archetypes, and we're going to throw them at Alan and myself and Katie, and we're going to try to determine the NBA player most likely to do these things. The first one I have, maybe we'll get to all of them, maybe we don't, but the first one is, who's the NBA player most likely to get eliminated in week one with a truly miserable cake showstopper? It's stodgy, maybe it's falling apart. Alan, who do you got in your mind as an NBA player who's going out early?
I think I got to say Solomon Hill. I've been watching Solomon Hill's Fro game for the past like year or so, and it's been Frederick Douglass. And then recently he just came out there with the flattest back fro. So it's like lack of attention to appearance. I feel like he's just out there trying to make a delicious cake, not a beautiful looking cake. And when it comes to the showstopper, it has to be both. It has to be both, you know?
Mm-hmm. Outstanding. Katie, do you have an idea?
That's pretty good.
Here? It is good.
Just like, to me, this is someone who is like, you know, they're technically great. Obviously, they've made it on the show and have made an NBA career, but they just buckle under pressure. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
This, to me, might be a Boston Celtic.
I appreciate all Boston slander.
I don't. This could be Tice. This could be Daniel Tice for me.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. I like that. Yeah. I thought you were going to go Kemba Walker as someone who crumbles under the pressure, but you know.
It's not his fault. You know, that I feel like I feel for Kemba, because Kemba to me existed before he was a Celtic. Do you know what I mean? I liked him. I liked him a lot. And then he went to the Celtics and I'm like, man, I got to just ignore him a little bit for his time with this team.
Yeah.
But I don't hold that against him.
So my answer for this is maybe unsurprising. I'm going to say Enes Kanter. The dude just gets really ambitious in the kitchen. Alan, I'm not sure if you saw in the summer, Enes Kanter made like this skillet cookie where he had a whole cookie layer on the bottom. In the middle, he put just like an array of full chocolate bars, like Kit Kats and cookies and creams. And then he put more cookie dough on top to seal it in. And like, I feel like he would have like these sort of designs on this ambitious, huge cake showstopper. But it's just like, what the fuck are the flavors here? And it's why is this the sweetest thing I've ever eaten in my life? Like Bruno's passing out because of a sugar overdose just as he takes his first bite. That's kind of where I'm seeing Enes Kanter going here. Like he comes in thinking, oh, I have so much experience in the kitchen, and just totally betrays him because he's not doing anything the judges want. We go to the next one, kind of the polar opposite here. Which NBA player is most likely to win Star Baker multiple times in the first 3 weeks of the show and become the early front runner? Alan?
I think Kyrie Irving. We're talking about hot starts here. Somebody who's going to be ready to go. Might not make it all the way to the finals, but like you're going to see some really tip-top bakes right out the gate, I feel.
That's a really good one. Kind of the inverse Nikola Jokic, where he starts slow and then plays himself into being an MVP over the course of the season. I like that. Katie, do you have a suggestion for the early front runner?
I'm going to go with Kyrie as well. That's a very good, strong. Like, I could see that. I could really see that happening. And then whether it's just like he becomes disinterested, he's got other stuff going on in his life, you know, he starts strong and then he kind of tapers away.
He gets to bread week and he's like, I'm going to go on a spirit quest for a couple of weeks. I'm just going to miss these episodes. Hopefully I can come back.
I don't, you know, I'm gluten. I don't like bread. I'm not going to make one. I'm G-free.
Yeah, I'm going to actually line up with both of you. I'll say Kyrie Irving. It's a good answer. We move on to the next one. Who is the most likely to get a handshake from Bruno on bread week? Alan.
Oh, it's got to be Giannis. Giannis loves that bread. It's all about that bread. That's what he's about. You going to do it, my boy.
Katie, do you have a suggestion here?
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to say maybe, again, it's Kyrie, because he makes some kind of crazy style bread that Bruno's never seen before. He's like, oh, I made this with a mix of like arrowroot, tapioca flour, you know, like it just like in a way that at first everyone's like, this isn't going to work out. Or it's like when they're skeptical and they're like, well, I'd love to see how this turns out. And you're a bit like, uh-oh, like, I guess it's not going to. But then it does and it's so good. Something like that.
Yeah. So, Katie, you're far more plugged into NBA internet than I am. Are there any NBA players who got into bread over the course of the pandemic at all?
Oh, no, because I think that a lot of NBA players' early pandemic days were much much different than ours. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They weren't stuck inside ordering yeast on like Amazon or eBay. Yeah. They were training or like on like vacations that were cut short, or then they were sent to the bubble where they did not have the means or desire to make bread like the rest of us who were just, you know, fending off depression.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't see that episode of Matisse Thybulle's, vlog about him making bread inside his Disneyland small room.
In his microwave.
For Jimmy Fallon.
I will say, JJ Redick feels like a fucking sourdough starter having motherfucker. I don't know. It just really feels like a JJ Redick thing. And he talks That's about like it on his Gary podcast Payton-esque. All the time. Yeah.
That's like a Gary Payton-esque like taunt right there. You sourdough yeast having motherfucker. Just right into JJ Redick's ear as he's trying to shoot a 3-point shot off a play.
Oh, anytime I can be compared to the glove, I'm very, very happy with myself. We move on to the next one. Which NBA player is just most likely to be absolutely exceptional at the technical challenges? Maybe lacks the creativity for the showstopper, but for the technicals, just every time, just exactly got it down pat. Alan, who do you think?
I have a toss-up between Kyle Lowry and Draymond Green. I feel like both of them do what they got to do to get the win. They kind of read situations and plug and play where need to be. And I think when it comes to a brief where you're kind of missing some things, they have the creativity to figure it out and we'll pull it out in the end.
Interesting. Katie, do you have a different answer?
Yeah, this is the only one I'll say I'm going to go historic on, but I think it's Rasheed Wallace because he does hold the record for the most technical fouls received in one season of the NBA. But I feel like this would be his opportunity to invert, you know what I mean? Invert that rude like characterization put upon him during his time in the NBA and be like, you know what? Tech's there, tech's here. I'm the greatest.
Yeah, I'm getting known for a new kind of technical, basically. Yeah, I can't disagree with that. When you come to Sheed, there's just nothing to go on top of that. So I'll side with you there. Although the Kyle and Draymond ones are quite good. Also, they love technicals too. So, but I do like their sort of like understanding of like the spatial awareness of the floor. That feels like you'd be really good at making a good. I don't know. What's a good technical challenge thing? A souffle. Like they got the souffle down pat. Let's move on to the next one. Who's most likely to become a judge after competing on the show like Liam did on the British Bake Off and he became the host of the Junior Bake Off? Alan, who do you think?
So it's got to be somebody whose expertise and probably going to be like coached and mentor later on. I think like Chris Paul would come out there and then he'd become the new judge and he'd be like a heel judge where like no one likes him. So he's just like mean to people. And he's like, you call this a cake? And he knocks it over and that's just like his whole thing. And that's the entire season. Like he didn't even tell you if it was good or bad. He just knocked over your cake. Just being very mean, very Chris Paul-like.
Screaming at the bakers. Oh man, that's a very, very
just D-ing good up as it goes into the oven. Just like, nope, just stealing cakes from people.
Katie, do you have a different answer or is Chris Paul too difficult to top?
No, I have Chris Paul for something else. So I got to come up like that is a very good answer, but I got to come up with one. I mean, by that logic, like if someone who's just like would become a judge because they were like, you know, I'm the greatest and there's no way like I want to judge other people now. Though I will also be extremely harsh on them and no one will ever like excel to my degree, it might be LeBron James for me.
Ooh. Yeah.
Ooh.
He would like the limelight. I think that's for sure. That's a good one.
He would come in like very like smiling and like gracious as he does, and then he would just tear people apart.
Yeah. I think LeBron adjacent. I think my answer would be Chris Bosh. Really solid. You know, Liam didn't win his season at British Bake Off. I think he finished like fourth. He was really engaging, though. Super fun to watch. You rooted for him like crazy. And I think Bosh has become such a good media personality. He's so good on TV. I just want that guy judging my
isn't he a judge?
My bundt cake.
He's been a judge on several other shows.
I feel like that's probably too. True.
So he's got judging experience.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff. We move on. Who in the NBA would be most likely to perfectly execute the checkerboard pattern on a Battenberg cake? Alan.
Let's see. I think just because of the precision passes, I feel like he's got a great steady hand. I got to go LaMelo Ball right here. Hot shot. Baker comes out the gate. Doesn't read the brief, but, you know, he just got that steady hand. It's that steady hand. It's going to look real nice.
I like that. Katie, do you have a suggestion here?
Yeah, this is Chris Paul for me.
Just the precision, the handle, all kind of similar ideas to the LaMelo thing.
I can just picture him doing it with that like furrowed, intense expression. Like, and then the scene is just cut to him looking at the cake, executing it, and then the music is pretty tense. And he kind of comes up and he's like, you know, like,
yeah. He did it. For me, no look. I think I'm going with like a bruiser for this one who like unexpectedly surprises you with their touch and attention to detail. I'm going to go like Jonas Valanciunas, just like a big hulking dude, but he puts it together and he's like so happy with himself after he's like, look, I did it. It's amazing. He's just very, very proud. And I think like he surprises you with his deft touch on such a particular and precise bake. So I'm going to go Jonas, but that's a good one. All right. So next up on our list of Canadian baking show archetypes, Alan, who do you think in the NBA would constantly be putting things in the oven with very little time to spare, is always battling the clock? Who do you got?
Oh, time management, someone who's probably not aware of the time. I have to say it's Chris Webber. I think Chris Webber would totally put it in. It's like, Chris, we're eating the cake now. And he's like, really? I want to call timeout. And like, you don't even have timeouts, Chris. Come on, man. Get it together. Call Jalen Rose. Tell him you want to be friends again. That's what
I would say. Very good answer. Katie, what do you got?
Yeah, mine is like purposefully, though. Like they know how much time they have and they're kind of watching it tick down. They just like to be on the edge, you know? But I think it's Damian Lillard for me.
Yeah. Just likes the flair for the dramatic with the buzzer beater.
Yeah.
Just plating exactly. As the time goes off. Yeah, that's a pretty good
always.
One. I'm going more in the vein of Alan, and I'm going to say Andrea Bargnani, the least aware dude in the history of basketball, just never knowing time and score. Also, probably like doesn't care enough to really manage his time super well because he didn't care about anything. So yeah, I got fine. I got this. I'll be good. And then there's 20 minutes left, and he has to put in his loaf of bread, and he gets eliminated as a result because it's wet and not done. So I got Bargs. We move on. This is a big one. Who gets kicked off on patisserie week? Alan, who do you got?
Ooh, I think JaVale McGee. I feel like he doesn't have the mindset to fold his dough more times than he needs to. I feel like he would do. He's like, no, that's sufficient. It's like, no, it's not, man. It's not. Keep going at it. So I'm going to say JaVale McGee, even though he's a three-time champion. So I think we should put some respect on his name.
Way to save it in front of Katie, the noted JaVale McGee. Like Katie feels about JaVale McGee the way I do about King Cake Baby. So,
listen, he has the same amount of championships as Larry Bird. I'm just going to leave it there. That's all I'm going to say.
Katie, who do you think is getting kicked off in patisserie week?
Yeah, it's always like, or not always, but quite often it is someone who is like self-obsessed patisserie fan, or they're like, I love patisserie, like I live for this, like I'm so knowledgeable, and then they kind of fumble it up, and then you're like, I can't believe they got kicked off on like their week, you know what I mean? So this is obviously a stretch, so I'm just gonna go for like a French person. but in that case, it's for me Evan Fournier.
Yeah. That's a French guy losing at it would be very funny. That's a good call. My answer for this is Patisserie P himself, Paul George. Look, the patisserie is the big time. It's where things get serious, and I could really envision him doing the equivalent of shooting a three off the side of the backboard in crunch time of a game seven, where he just like maybe like over whips his curd or something like that on a little lemon tart, and it just becomes cheese or something like really basic that he just completely screws up, chokes under the pressure. Patisserie P it is. And I will hear no other arguments. We move on to the final one. Who, Alan, is the most likely in the NBA to drop their whole cake on the floor as they are removing it from the oven?
I have to say it's got to be Aaron Baines. I feel like if you give him the cake, he's, you know, he's going to drop it either on the way to the gingham altar or out the oven. However long he has it for, just count the clock because it's going to be on the ground soon.
Yep.
Yeah.
Katie, do you have anything better than that? Because I certainly don't.
I mean, yeah, I was going to go with another big man, mostly for, I think, his like really downtrodden reaction. I thought maybe like Brooke Lopez, but I think I'm going to go with Alan on this. It's got to be Aaron Baines. He just can't physically hold on to anything. His hands aren't able to move in a claw motion and close.
When he realizes it's falling out of his hands, he tries to bat it over to the baker at the other station behind him, and it just doesn't work.
Yeah, he sabotages someone else's bake.
Yeah. Oh, Aaron Baines. Poor guy. But that feels like a good place to leave off the great NBAdian baking show and move into the way we wrap up every single episode of the podcast. It is our posters of the week, where we highlight the best in NBA social media over the course of the week. Alan, you're the guest. We'll let you go first. Who do you got for your poster of the week?
Okay, so I read the brief and I went real literal with it. So I thought it was like a poster, like the best dunk of the week. So I picked one that made me feel really, yeah. Even though as I read it now, it is in quotes. So I'm starting to clue in. I just put the one that made me feel very happy. I was going to change it if the Raptors didn't win last night, because I was like, I don't want a poster from a loss. But Chris Boucher on the Wiz. I'm just, what it means to me, it's just Chris Boucher is finally blossoming, becoming this the player that he can be, and he's getting the opportunities. And he just slammed it on the Wizards, threw it down on their whole team. So there's talking about that play, and hopefully you can imagine it.
Well, look, here's the thing is this actually kind of works for the conceit of the segment as well, because if anybody is likely to post their highlights on their social media, it's Chris Boucher. So it is a post from NBA social media, I am sure. So you are still well within the parameters of the segment either way. But it's never a bad thing to talk about dunks anyway, so I'm not complaining. my post for the week, continuing with the Raptors heavy theme of this week, is from last night, also after the Wizards game, a good feel-good win for your Toronto Raptors, or our Toronto Raptors, who I guess they're not yours necessarily if you're listening to this. It is Kyle Lowry singing on DeAndre Bembry's IG. Let's hear it, producer Dylan.
I'll do them for you. I want to see. I'll do them for you.
I don't know what the song is. If either of you know, please pipe in.
It's so faint.
It's so faint.
I don't recognize it.
It's clearly not, he's not taking Hassan Whiteside singing lessons, sadly. but anytime Kyle Lowry's feeling good enough to sing, I think that is worthy of poster of the week. Shout out to DeAndre Bembry, a real sweetheart in the Raptors setup. Katie, we close it out with you. Who is your poster of the week?
Yeah, Tobias Harris keeps doing this thing where he's posting pictures where he's like a tiny version of himself. It's like he either looks like a baby or a kid, but there's one of like him dunking, and there's one of him just like walking in a court, and I don't know what it is or where it came from or like who's making them, but he really likes them. So I'm just gonna keep my eyes on this weird phenomenon.
A tiny Tobias Harris / King Cake Baby like remix. Can we get that going?
Ooh,
hell yeah.
Maybe.
Is he doing like the baby filter? Is that what's going on?
There's a baby, like
the one that like that Stephen A. Smith is done up in, like the where like
and it makes your voice, whole
makes you look like a baby.
No, because they're like they look like their game. One is like a babyfied version of him in a tunnel look, and he has a mask on, and he's like wearing a very smart blazer. Another is a baby version of him or a child version of him dunking. And it looks like it's taken from like game, like a game photo. So I don't, it's not a filter. Like someone is doing this work for him. Maybe he is. I don't know. But I don't know what's going on there. Work. Yeah.
Outstanding. Very good round of posters of the week to close out the show. We are done. We've reached the end here. We have to thank our wonderful guest, Alan Shane Lewis of the Great Canadian Baking Show, for joining us today. This was a ton of fun, man. Where can people find you? And remind people again when they can check out the new season of Great Canadian Baking Show.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at the Alan Shane, A-L-A-N-S-H-A-N-E, or on Instagram at Alan Shane, and Twitch at Shoeless Lewis. And make sure to watch the Great Canadian Baking Show that is on February 14th, this Sunday, 8 p.m. on CBC and CBC Gem.
Fantastic. Can't wait to check it out. And hopefully we can have you back on the podcast someday, man.
Love to. I had so much fun.
Yeah, this was great. Katie, you got anything you want to plug?
Yeah, the baking show. I can't wait to watch it. And everybody else should too.
Yeah, I too will plug the Great Canadian Baking Show. I'm not plugging Bell Media this week. And that was all I'll say there. We will wrap it all up and remind you to go to our Patreon, patreon.com/basketball. It's very much appreciated. $4 a month gets you into our Patreon community, into our Discord chat where you have my King Cake Baby profile pic, all that good stuff. And our mailbag episodes will be our new one coming out very, very soon here. Huge thanks, as always, to our crew at Space Monkey Media. Social producer Jess, who just got a new job today, and we're gonna miss her so much because she's the freaking best and makes us look so good. We love her, and we wish her all the best. Of course, producer Dylan making us sound amazing. We got Sean and Clay and the whole back crew team at Space Monkey as well. They're the best. And go listen to our other Stringer podcasts like Sportsfeld and Columbia House Party as well. That'll do it. We will talk to you again next week with another edition of Basketball.